Welcome to Tech Talk by LG. My name is Erik Svalberg and I'm product specialist here at LG Electronics Nordic. I'm fascinated by tech and I enjoy learning about how things work. So this is a podcast where we get to do exactly that. It's about all things tech and we break down different topics and technologies so that you can also gain a deeper understanding of your favorite products and all of the gadgetry around you every day. Today's topic is the tech in gaming, and we're going to break down some of the hardware involved and explain what those different specifications actually mean to you as a gamer. Hardware in gaming is such a complex topic because gaming is entirely reliant on the hardware that you have. In PC gaming, it's popular to build your own gaming computer, and as you'll soon find out, it takes a lot of understanding to pick the right parts. Now, if you're new to this, you've never built a computer before, you might feel that all of the specifications and parts and everything, it just makes no sense. So I'm going to start by trying to break it down. But if after this you still feel that it's too much of a hassle, don't worry. You'll still be able to go out and get yourself a pre-built computer or a console for that matter. And you'll have the knowledge that you're making a slightly more educated purchase. Let's start by talking about the GPU, the graphic processing unit, and the CPU, the central processing unit. Typically, these are what we just refer to as the graphic card and the processor. They're also probably the most discussed components whenever you're building a gaming rig. Now, to be fair, the GPU, the graphic card, is probably what stands out the most of any gaming computer. But I think it's easier to actually start by explaining the CPU, and there you kind of get a grip of what's going on inside the computer. So, first off, you'll hear about this thing called cores. Each processor has a certain number of cores, and then each processor also has a certain clock speed on those cores. Now, the reason we discuss processors in this way is because everything that goes on inside a computer is a series of calculations. Every task it performs is basically a series of equations. So you have this thread of calculations that it's doing at any given moment, and each thread is a single task. Now, normally you would allocate one thread to each core. The core will then resolve those and move on to the next. In some cases, there is multi-threading, which is when a single core is able to have two different threads, resolve them in parallel, and obviously split the resources of the core. But typically you're looking at one task per core. So having more cores opens up for more multitasking. It allows the processor to do more than one thing at a single time, and processors can go from, you know, quad core, 4 cores to 8 cores, 16 cores, and they can technically go higher. Now, you're also going to need somewhere to keep anything that's actively being worked with, and that sort of short-term memory is referred to as RAM, random access memory. So ideally, you want more cores with a higher clock speed and as much RAM as possible, so that you can process as much as possible, as fast as possible. That said though, that's something that applies more to video editing, 3D editing, modeling, things like that. When it comes to a gaming rig, the real kicker is getting the best possible graphics card. Now, what really stands out about a gaming rig is the focus on the graphic card, the GPU. It's the part that translates what happens in the code into an image that you can see on the screen. And there are a lot of parallels with the processor. The GPU uses its own type of RAM, known as GDDR RAM. A key difference between GDDR RAM and the RAM that the processor uses is just physically that the RAM used by the processor is separate, a separate part that you can buy, expand, add on to, and this isn't the case with the GDDR RAM. The type of RAM used by the GPU is more optimized for large packages of data and very, very high transfer speed. So it's got a much bigger bandwidth. But at the same time, you don't need as much space. It's very much just in, out, and a lot of data at any given moment, but not much being kept around for any longer extended periods. Another parallel is the cores. So you do actually have cores, but they don't work exactly the same. In a CPU, you'll have 4, 8, 16 cores. In a GPU, you'll have probably thousands of cores. And then, as if that wasn't complicated enough, you're also going to have different names for these cores in different brands. So you might hear a specification about how many CUDA cores it has or how many stream processors it has. And this doesn't really translate between brands. But what is comparable is actually the type of work that they're carrying out. So they're all trying to calculate. And that's where you can actually compare between different brands. Because there is a term, and it sounds amazing, it's called teraflop. It sounds made up, I know, I haven't made it up, it's a real word. So like I said, whatever happens inside a computer is basically just a bunch of equations, a bunch of calculations. And for a graphic card, you can measure the speed of that particular graphic card in teraflops, which is trillion floating point calculations per second. So it's basically a type of finite calculation, and these are the calculations that are being done in order to translate code into images, in order to actually show you what is going on inside of your game. But speed is a big topic here as well, because let's say you're gaming and you need to load something, whether it's a save game or the next area, part of the map, you need to load a different level in the game. Now, all of that is going to be retrieved from the long-term storage. And if you're not going to get stuck on these loading screens, on the image. And this is the same thing if you're watching sports, if you're watching a movie, an action movie, anywhere where you have action, anywhere where you have quick movements, if you want clarity, if you want to be able to see what's going on, you also want a high frame rate. And not every image is going to be equally challenging. Sometimes the task is just more complex. And during those moments, a GPU can actually drop the frame rate so that it's still able to give you a good image, but maybe at 60 frames per second instead of 120, or maybe at 109 frames per second instead of 144. And this is what's called variable refresh rate. But I'll get back to that when we're talking about screens, because before that, I do want to touch upon one other topic, which is the hard drive. I spoke about RAM earlier, and that's the short-term memory, but you also want storage space, the long-term memory, and that's what the hard drive is for. But don't make the mistake of only thinking about the storage space, because of course you want as much space as possible, but at the same time, the speed of the hard drive is going to be very important. There are both mechanical hard drives and solid-state hard drives, and typically the latter will give you higher speeds, whereas the mechanical drives give you more space for the same amount of money, but they are typically slower than the solid state drives are. Now, a lot of times if you're building a PC, you might actually want to go for both. That is, have a slightly smaller solid state drive that you install your most heavy duty games on, while the mechanical hard drive can be more like just general storage space, movies, music, whatever you want to keep on there. You'll notice a significant improvement when it comes to things like loading screens or booting up the game from the beginning or loading the save game that you left off from. Now, all of this is relevant whether you are building or buying, but if you are building, there are some other things that you really need to think about. For example, the motherboard. This is where everything else connects. It's the biggest chip in the computer, and it's where you're going to plug everything, and you need to make sure that it has the right slots, that it's compatible with everything you're buying. Otherwise, you're going to sit there with a bunch of cool parts, and you're not going to have any way of connecting them. Another thing is that you need to make sure that you have a power supply that can actually provide enough power to run everything you put in there, because what if you have a decent power supply, but you really went overboard on the CPU and the graphics card, and they are just consuming way too much? And once you know how much power your computer is going to consume, you're going to have to make sure that you have a cooling system that can keep the temperature down so that you don't overheat and ruin your rig, or, you know, set your house on fire. Just kidding, you're probably not going to set your house on fire, but don't set your house on fire. Seriously, overheated computers are actually a fire hazard, so make sure you have a good cooling system. Now, with that said, I should probably point out that in the PC building community, it's also very common to see people that went way overboard on the cooling system. Having these massive water cooling systems with LED lights and all tubes going all over the place looks awesome, but you probably don't need it. If you think that's an excessive investment, don't worry, it probably is. It's really more of a PC building community thing where they get to show off how cool their computer looks at the same time as bragging about how powerful the computer is because it needs such an excessive cooling system. If we're being realistic, most computers can do with a couple of good fans, and that's it. building your own computer can be extremely satisfying because you know that every part is handpicked to your taste, and whatever you have in the end is exactly what you wanted. You didn't pay for anything you didn't want. You didn't pay for anyone else to put the whole thing together. And you end up with a computer that is customized to your personal needs as a gamer. On the other hand, many people get started with this simply by buying a pre-made computer, and then tech becomes obsolete and you end up switching out the parts. Switch out the graphic card, then switch out the processor, maybe adding more RAM and a bigger hard drive. And this is also a very digestible way for people to learn about PC building part by part. But now I hear you say, oh no, I only have about 3 hours every week that I can spend on gaming, and I don't want to waste all of that time shopping for parts. I don't want to worry about if my computer is going to be compatible with the game that my friends are playing so that we can actually connect online and have fun. And okay, good. You might want to go for a console then. You see, the thing about consoles is liberating you from all of that hassle. For that same reason, of course, PC gamers tend to claim that PC gaming is so vastly superior to any console gaming. But the truth is that at the time of launch, a video game console is usually on par with a pretty powerful gaming computer. Are there going to be PCs that have much better hardware? Yes, of course. If you have an unlimited budget, you can build an absolute monstrosity. But a console is still going to be on par with a very good gaming computer, and it comes with the added bonus of having the same hardware as everybody else who bought that console, which means that video game developers will have that in mind if they want their game to be played. Now, if you want a point of comparison, the latest Xbox Series X or the PS5, they're both working with the same 8-core AMD processors, 16 gigabytes of RAM. They both use AMD graphic cards, but the Xbox Series X has a 12 teraflop card, whereas the PS5 has a 10.3 teraflop graphics card, and they both offer a 120 frames per second in output, as well as up to 8K resolution. Those specifications are pretty much on par with a pretty good gaming computer, and you're getting a bit more bang for the buck because you're probably paying less for this than you would be for a computer with the same specs. You have the disadvantage that you can't upgrade it, but you have the advantage that you don't have to upgrade it. The biggest noticeable difference in specifications would probably be the output of 120 frames per second. This is because a console is typically made to be connected to a television, and in television, the standards go to 60 or 120 frames per second and not really beyond that. PC gaming monitors are typically made to max out somewhere around 144 or 240 frames per second, with the possibility of being overclocked, so they might be able to go a bit beyond that. On the other hand, for your graphic card to be able to render the image at that frame rate, it's very likely that it's going to have to push down the quality of the image. In other words, even as a PC gamer, if you are pushing that computer to pump out the highest possible frame rates, it's very likely that you're also pushing down the resolution. So why would you want to do that? Well, it comes down to the way you play. For instance, if you are a competitive gamer, perhaps you're into first-person shooters or something with a lot of action and you need to be able to respond fast and see details really fast, well, then frame rate might actually be more important than the quality of the image. On the other hand, if you are more into the immersion, the experience, the story, you might actually want to prioritize the quality of the image because just like a movie, that's what's really going to deliver that visual sensation. Alright, well that brings us to the final topic of the day, and that is that window into the digital world, the interface between human and machine, the display. And this is something that you might have to take a stand on, even if you would rather just not think about it, because it's sold separately. So you're going to have to figure out, first of all, if you are getting a TV or a monitor. And the first specification you need to understand is what's called the input lag. And the total input lag of your device is basically the time it takes from you hitting a mouse button, for example, and the signal reaching the screen and becoming an image. So all the time that it takes to pass through your computer, get processed, and actually show up. But when you're looking at a screen, you're really talking about the input lag of that device alone, and that is the time it takes for the signal to reach the screen, get processed, and then get displayed. As with everything else in a gaming computer, it's all about speed. And in this case, it's also about your speed, because getting things up on the screen faster means you can respond to them faster. And if there is a lag, if the screen is a bit behind, then you might miss a shot, because when you click, the character you were shooting at already ran past, or you might miss a jump. And if the thought of that doesn't really make you cringe, I would question if you are actually a gamer. If, on the other hand, you tend to blame the input lag every time you do miss a jump, well, the disadvantage of having a good enough display is that you won't be able to pull that excuse anymore. Now, historically, if you were looking at TVs, the input lag would be insane compared to what a PC monitor would give you. And back in the days, they would say that, you know, anywhere around 30 milliseconds or less, that was a really good speed for a TV. But if you compare that to a gaming monitor, where the input lag is around 1 millisecond, well, then there's a bit of a difference. Now, you might think that a few milliseconds isn't that much, but at the same time, keep in mind that they add up. It's the input lag of your actual device, it's the input lag of your input device, so the mouse or the gamepad that you're playing with, added to the input lag of the screen itself. And if you are looking at TVs, for example, a lot of modern TVs still have those numbers up in the, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s beyond. But if you do look for a TV that is made with gaming in mind, then you can definitely find something in the low teens or even the single digits, in the best cases, even the low single digits. So you can absolutely find some very good options in way of gaming TVs. They're still not going to be as fast as the fastest gaming monitors, but they're getting there, and they have made some headway in the last few years. Meanwhile, a gaming monitor might offer you lower input lag and higher frame rates, in some cases much higher frame rates, but sometimes this is also sacrificing a bit of picture quality. They might not go all the way up to 4K resolution, some of them, and they might not be able to treat the image in the same way to give you the best possible visual experience. So there is a trade-off in any case, and the best option here is basically whatever gives you the best experience, because it is down to how you play. And while the most common solution would be for a PC gamer to have a PC gaming monitor and a console gamer to use a gaming TV, the truth is that the line between the two is harder and harder to see every year, because these days features are overlapping between TVs and monitors. You're getting TVs in smaller screen sizes to accommodate PC gamers. You're getting monitors in larger screen sizes to accommodate console gamers. But the rule of thumb is still that the PC gaming monitors are going to be a bit faster, and the TVs are still a bit more optimized for the best possible visual experience. It is down to your play style. Now, I did talk about features overlapping, and I wanted to get to some of those features as well, because they will matter a lot regardless which type of screen you choose. One of these is being able to synchronize the frame rate of the screen to the frame rate of the graphics card. As I mentioned earlier, the GPU might change the frame rate depending on how difficult it is to render that image. And for that, you need to make sure the screen can keep up, that it's synchronized. So if you are running on an NVIDIA graphics card, the standard is called G-Sync, and there's different versions of G-Sync, but basically what that means is that it can synchronize the frame rate with the screen. If it drops or goes higher, the screen will change as well. Meanwhile, if you are running a graphic card from AMD, you need to make sure that your screen supports FreeSync. That's what they use. And this is what you're also going to find then on the latest generation of consoles. Now, that's an example of something that started out in the PC market and sort of migrated over into consoles. But another thing that started out in cinema is HDR, which allows you to get better color performance, a better range of colors in the image. And that is something that is now also creeping into consoles and PC graphic cards. If you have support for that, then you should make sure that your screen also supports it. There are different formats of HDR, and that's going to make a big difference to how visually appealing that image can be. One of the most important formats here to keep an eye out for is Dolby Vision, which you'll probably recognize as the format of choice for most high-quality cinema. And if your gaming device supports it, if your screen supports it, and the game title supports it, you're probably in for a pretty visually stunning experience. And while we're on the topic of HDR, there's also something called HDIG. It's basically a collaboration between screen manufacturers, game developers, and graphic card and console manufacturers, which allows for the device that you're playing on to recognize what screen you're playing on and render the game in a way that's going to be optimized for that display. The result being that the HDR image that you get is exactly the same image that the creators of the game intended for you to see. And it's a very common thing to see these sorts of standardizations from the film industry, where you have, for instance, film directors who want to make sure that their vision is really delivered correctly to the audience. But it's relatively new to the gaming industry, and it has a lot to do, of course, with the advancement of gaming graphics and the fact that gaming is becoming almost a form of art now, that it wants to tell a story and it wants to deliver an emotion. And while many gamers are still just chasing after that high score, others are really just looking to experience something, to feel something in those games. And that's why a lot of game titles focus so heavily on storytelling and visuals. Well, I wish I could say we've covered everything now, but to be honest, we've barely scratched the surface. There's so much tech to learn about in gaming, and the way to figure out what sort of rig you want, what sort of display you want, it's kind of a bigger question than just the tech. It's also a question of what sort of gamer you are. But I hope I've been able to give you some good information, and I hope you've learned something. And while you have that long good think about what gaming experience you're really looking for, I hope that you also have a new appreciation and interest in the hardware that you're going to be playing on. Until then, I hope you beat your high score, I hope you defeat that final boss, and I hope you join us for our next episode. Whichever platform you're listening on, don't forget, like, subscribe, but most importantly, check back when we dig into another tech topic. Thank you for listening. Until next time.